Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another three in a row episode. You've got the full cast here with me, Tokmeh. We've got a lot to cover today. It's been 4 weeks since we last recorded. Apologies for that. That's our bad. But that just gives us more to talk about, right? We'll start by talking about the Women's World Cup and all the controversy that's come off the back of that with the Spanish national team. And then we'll look at the Premier League and all that's happened in the first 4 weeks and then the rest of the leagues across the world. Starting, of course, with Arsenal's victory over Man United.
Oh, please.
Sunday. but first of all, let's see how the lads are doing. If I had to check in, how are you?
I'm chilling, man. I'm good. Work's been killing me lately, but other than that, I'm fine. I'm not too stressed by the events of the past few days in terms of the football. I know you guys expect me to be crying and dying, but I mean,
it's a normal occurrence. We don't like, why would you cry over something?
Yeah, exactly. It was the expected outcome.
No, trust me, we don't lose to Arsenal all the time. I feel you. You can check the history books. But yeah.
The history books say at the Emirates it's usually a confirmed win for us.
Oh, please, Davola. let's get into the episode anyway. Yeah. But I'm good. Davola, check in. What are you saying?
I'm doing good, man. Obviously, football's been good this past couple of days, but I also had the time to, you know, decompress off work a bit and see and do things. So that's been good. But, you know, we're back in the office tomorrow. So God be with us.
Decompression is dangerous, so let the record show that that's decompression and your decompression are not the same.
Okay, Alpha, how you doing? How are you, bro?
Thank you for asking if I do.
I'm good, man. I've not been asking you how far.
As in, everybody just freeze me. I'm well. I'm always well, man. Thank God. Can't complain. London is sunny for a change. And yeah, just work is working. I'm gearing up for some travel soon. And I've been very lucky to attend a few Arsenal games now. The tickets are rolling in this season. Unfortunately, I'm going to miss the North London Derby, which was like obviously one of my biggest dreams as a kid. I won't be in London, so I have to give my ticket away. I'll be in Greece, Corfu, nowhere special, but it's a friend's 30th birthday, so like I have to be there. If not, I would have chosen the game, of course.
Yeah, I'm sure you'll get to, you know, experience that North London Derby sometime, maybe next season, next 2 seasons at some point.
Amen. But yeah, before I get distracted talking about Arsenal and obviously the Prem, we wanted to start with the Women's World Cup. First of all, congratulations to Spain. If you're living under, unless you're living under a rock, you know that they just won the World Cup, the Women's World Cup, by defeating England in the final pretty comfortably. And we say it's despite, you know, problems between the players and the coaching staff and ultimately the FA. I mean, it's been a couple of weeks now, so the latest news as of literally today, I guess, is the Spanish coach Vilda. Jorge Vilda is his name? Is it?
I think so, yes.
Yeah, Jorge Vilda.
He's been sacked. He has been sacked despite taking the team all the way to the final. I mean, there was huge tensions between the team and Jorge Vilda. Before the World Cup, 15 players kind of registered or signed this petition that they wouldn't play for Spain anymore, three of which were starters who would have gone to the World Cup, who weren't there because they kind of complained about their manager. Reportedly, he imposed a rule where players could like not lock their hotel rooms until midnight while on international duty, and he checked their bags, etc., etc. All sorts of dodgy, misogynistic behaviors, essentially. That was topped off in the end by the kiss or the kissening. Spanish FA president.
I'm not even gonna lie, that dude is wild.
I mean, if you haven't seen it, like Rubiales is his name. Luis Rubiales, he went ahead and decided to kiss the Spanish captain dead or Spanish midfielder Hermoso dead in the lips during the trophy presentation. Definitely unwarranted, definitely unexpected. And FIFA has suspended him. I mean, guys, this all seems kind of straightforward in terms of these men are doing wrong. They should be eliminated from the game. Do you guys have much to say on this?
I mean, 100%. Definitely very weird behavior. I'm very confused as to how the event unfolded. I mean, you kiss somebody dead on the lips. They come out to say, I mean, it wasn't warranted. I didn't like it. I didn't want it. I don't know why he did it, you know. And I mean, we're in the modern age where, you know, there's so much awareness going on in general, you know. And yeah, someone says, oh, you know, this, you violated me somehow, right? And the authorities are telling you to resign, and you're trying to find some sort of moral high ground somewhere. You know, it just tells everything about you, really. So yeah, I'm glad to know that it's being settled finally, because I don't know why it dragged on for so long. They made it look as if there were two sides to it. I don't really see the two sides to it. But yeah, I'm glad he's suspended. Let's get that over with. I don't like to see that kind of stuff in football.
Yeah, and I also want to take a moment to mention that UEFA's handling of this entire scenario has been appalling, extremely reactive. The fact that Bilda was still a possible awardee for Women's Coach of the Year at the recent ceremony was wild to me, given everything was going on. The fact that he didn't take proactive action to suspend Rubiales, and the only suspension in effect that they used as a cover was that by FIFA. So there's been a lot of like terrible action from the men's game, the Spanish men captains not releasing what appeared to be a half-hearted statement saying, oh, we just want to focus on football. It's the entire response has left a lot to be desired, right? I guess the only positive I can say is there is some action, and hopefully more can be done so these women can actually just do what the Spanish men captain said they wanted to do, which is just play ball. The women also just want to play ball, but you know.
Yeah, I think just to your point, Damola, I can't remember which of the officials it was, but whoever it is, either in the Spanish FA or maybe even in FIFA itself, that hired Rubiales, basically has failed to come out and really damn him or state anything strong, because they're friends. They're friends, they're neighbors, they're actually guys. So he's quite reluctant to throw Rubiales under the bus. And funny enough, like, I don't know if his mom is still doing this, but she went on a hunger strike at PAS. Some reports have suggested that based on all the controversy that her son was receiving, she went on a hunger strike in their local monastery until everything is cleared up and his suspension has been removed. Yeah.
That's, yeah, I saw that news and I was like, damn, bro. I guess even, you know, we respect all the mothers out there, but even old women are not exempt from foolishness.
No, as in, obviously, your mumsy gas stay on your side, so yeah. That one is not a surprise. I mean, the last thing that I wanted to mention on the Spanish national team that I found was really interesting was they've only existed for 10 years. 10 years ago, there was no national Spanish team, women's.
That's so crazy, man.
Ten years later, they're winning the World Cup. So I find that absolutely crazy. I find it like a testament to what can happen if you decide to invest in something as a nation, put in the right facilities, et cetera, et cetera. Like, it's an incredible case study. And of course, Asna just signed the two best defenders in the tournament.
Oh, please. Oh.
One of them is the Spanish one, and another one is from Sweden. We just signed both of them.
And don't forget, Alicia Russo is going to be a national striker this season.
So. Oh, guys, please.
We're cooking heavy. But yeah, watch this space for now. So, let's move on to the Premier League. And Aifatu, I don't think you're going to enjoy this conversation any more than the one we were just
having. Why not? Let's have it.
I mean, there's a lot to talk about. Prem back, first of all. It's been 4 weeks of, I think it's safe to say, amazing football. There's a lot to cover. I'll try and just take it kind of like a couple team by team. Best place for us to start based on recency would be Arsenal and Manchester United. Damola, how do you assess Arsenal's start to the season so far?
I think it's interesting because we're, what, 3 wins out of 4, 1 draw, so yep. 10 from 12. Obviously, I think we've given our fixtures list, we should have been 4-4-4, but 3-4-4 is not bad. My most interesting thing is trying to figure out the way Arteta wants to set up, which was towards the second half of last season, especially after Saliba went down. Our team could not adapt to him going down because we're a bit one-dimensional in terms of the way we set up. And because our defense is high risk, if you don't have players of the quality of Saliba who understand the system there, it gets exposed, aka Rob Holding. Not saying it was just him, but he was a big part to play. And I think the theme this season is Arteta is making us very hard to play against on the transition. And we're really giving anything away except individual mistakes. All the goals we've conceded this season have been individual mistakes.
But well, there have been a lot of goals conceded, though. It keeps happening.
Yeah, we need to figure that out. I think it's that not London Forever song, but that's just my theory.
Yeah, the song rings in the stadium. Like, yeah, it's such a big feeling.
Yeah, it's magnificent. But if those players don't calm down, it's going to be a very annoying process where I hear not London Forever and I know we're conceding.
It's mistakes right in the beginning of the game as well, actually.
Yep. But I think against the United game, I may have been the occasion. We didn't make too many mistakes. Right, the one mistake
except we made. Kai Havertz.
Exactly.
Kai Havertz made many mistakes.
The one mistake we made, we paid for it with that Rashford goal. So, again, we still have some cleanup to do. But I get what Arteta is doing, and I'm not against it. At the same time, I do think there should be a time limit on how much he tries the Havertz experiment, especially in the Premier League.
And Partey at right back is some bullshit as well.
Because I think it depends. It depends on the profile of players. If you're playing against City that doesn't have blistering wingers that are playing maybe Grealish and Bernardo Silva, I think it works. If you're playing against Rashford, that doesn't work and it will get exposed very quickly. So I get it. And it's one of those, like, I get what he's trying to do. I can see what he's trying to do. And based off that, I know it's not going to be the slick attacking football we saw, especially in the first half of last season. That being said, you can tell that, except Havertz, the team seems to have bought into the system and understand what we're trying to do now with the new setup. It may just take some time for the attack to flow as freely as we wanted to. But also, all in all, I think it was a good game. I liked how we played United. We didn't get baited into the press for Onana to pick us up. Because to be honest, I give him a lot of shit off banter, but he's a very, very good goalkeeper, especially when it comes to his distribution. So yeah, it was all in all, we limited United. We didn't bite what they wanted us to do. We even slightly tweaked the way we pressed so that they only had the ball in their defensive areas. But I think we played well. All in all, it was a game we dominated. We need to clean up the defensive mistakes and we need to be more fluid in attack.
To be honest, I think both teams played like teams that have not yet completely understood the systems that they were in. And the quality of the game in general probably could have been much better. But how about Declan Rice, huh? £5 million impact. I call it impact.
I will never be satisfied with that fee. But he earned his money yesterday. Shout out to the Congress.
Hey, they've done well. They've done all right so far. I want to ask Ifatu about United. It's 2 wins and 2 losses so far in this season. It seems a bit like there's a lot of turmoil, definitely off the pitch. With now obviously the reports that we're having that Anthony is, you know, being investigated for his own domestic abuse charges, and then of course we have Sancho being dropped out of the squad completely, and then Ten Hag saying that It's because he's not training well enough. And then Sancho now went to go to go on social media to say the media is spreading lies about me. I mean, if I to, how do you assess United's start to the season?
Honestly, not the best, but I cannot say that I expected the best given what has been going on with the whole takeover with the Glazers. You know, it's rotten at the top, right at the very top. But I mean, I can't just keep blaming the top, especially when we are watching, especially after watching a football match with, you know, 11 players, you know, playing. Honestly, like I said, it's not the best. But there are explanations for certain aspects of what has gone down at Manchester United. I feel like the Sancho situation is quite evident to everybody. Sancho has been at Manchester United for around 3 years now, well, close to 3 years, 2.5 years, and he hasn't quite delivered the sort of impact that was expected of him, despite multiple opportunities to do so. That's the fact, right? So if your manager comes and says that you have not been training at the level that is expected for a start at Manchester United, and that is why you have not been included in the team selection, and then you now go on social media to respond to him directly or indirectly, because you can say he's saying social media is spreading lies, but he's talking about his manager. He's referring to what his manager said, and there's evidence of what his manager said, and that's exactly what he's reacting to. So if you go and react to that by saying that your manager is lying, you know, and that you have been picked on for a while, you know, then, I mean, it just shows your reaction to, it just shows how you deal with, you deal with hardship. You know, that's not the kind of reaction that I want from a Manchester United player. You cannot be attacking the manager. No player should be bigger than the manager. No player is bigger than my manager. So I think that, yeah, whatever happens to him, he should just take it like that. We've had 2 wins and 2 losses. 2 losses away from home. So again, warning signals, sort of what happened last season. You know, we couldn't get wins away from home, especially against top 8 teams in the league. And that's happening again. I don't want to give too many excuses, but we have a lot of injuries, right? We lost our 2 first-choice centre-backs. In fact, our first 1, 2, 3, actually, because we don't have Varane. We lost Lisandro Martinez. And for some reason, Lindelof was also taken off. Apparently, there's some injury concern there as well. You know, we don't have our first 2 choice left-backs. Luke Shaw is not there. Malacia is not there, you know. We are handicapped quite a bit, you know. And, yeah, with the handicap we've had and with the poor transfer window that we've had and with the injury, you know, concerns that we are still facing, I don't think there's too much cause for worry. I would bide my time and see how things go, and I'll support my team.
What did you think of the way the team, well, first of all, just on your point, it was very funny. No, not played Arsenal. I mean, I was going to talk about Mason Greenwood and how Manchester has handled that situation.
Yeah, Manchester United have not handled many situations very well. They are very reactionary, similar to what Damola said about UEFA. You know, it's like they're just waiting to see the reaction, and then they now try to react a bit and try to do some damage control, which I think is a very horrible way of dealing with situations in general. You should have a policy and you should stick by it and stand by it regardless of what is going to happen. You know, you learn from it. If you make a mistake, you learn from it and you come out and you say you made a mistake. If indeed you feel you made a mistake. You know, the Mason Greenwood situation, they've come out and, I mean, I know that we initially wanted to just reintegrate him back into the team. And then there was a lot of
Ten Hag. That was Ten Hag's Bible.
Yeah, I believe, well, not just Ten Hag. I believe the owner, Richard Arnold, a lot of other people at the club, they were already gearing towards welcoming him back into the team, reintegrating him into the team. You know, this Sancho guy, I tell you, at the beginning of the transfer window, he was supposed to be listed. You know, but I mean, I think they communicated to the manager that if we sell him, we won't get value for money, and we don't have money to replace him. Right, which speaks to the management of the club in general. But I don't want to go too much into that. With the Greenwood situation, they've reacted and decided, okay, it's fine. Greenwood's long-term future should not be Manchester United. And they've gone and released an official statement to that effect, right? Now, what has happened is that they've now loaned him out to Getafe. And that's a loan is not parting ways. You can mutually terminate the contract and make the player a free agent and he can go and do whatever the hell he wants. But you've not done that. You've not actually released the player, have you? You know?
Yep, he's still in your books. So I
yes.
wonder what happens if he has a fantastic loan spell like Getafe?
Yes, if from all indications, if he has a wonderful first 3-4 months at Getafe, he's coming back in January.
Oh,
There's
yeah,
a clause
you know
to...
for a fact. You
Yeah.
know for a fact you're trying to bring him back.
I don't know for a fact, but if you go on, you put in a clause in his contract with Getafe in the loan, this thing, that he can be recalled in January. That means you're definitely considering the fact that there might be a situation that will arise that will require you to bring him back. So not only might we bring him back after his loan spell finishes in July or August, we might even bring him back earlier in January.
So this is what I think, right? I think from all the reports, and shout out to The Athletic for fantastic reporting on this. Every report we've seen about this Greenwood situation has told us that United were going to bring him back. Then The Athletic broke the news and they said the heat was too much and they felt the heat will not die down. Very importantly, before the end of the transfer window. If the heat was going to die down before the end of the transfer window, they could have figured it out. But once they saw the heat wasn't going to die down before the end of the transfer window, they were like, let him go away from here. And their hope is that success covers all wrongs. Similar to the way nobody really, like, for a brief period of time, people bring up cities cheating and a couple of other things. Again, financial doping. Very different from sexual assault allegations. But again, because of the success and how well they've played, that's never been the main point people talk about when it comes to them. That appears to be United's strategy right now, where with Greenwood, they are hoping he bangs at Getafe. And if he bangs at Getafe, they can be like, oh, do you want us to let such a talented youngster go, quote unquote, one of our own? And that's what they're going to try to use to bring him back. And it's like, at the end of the day, it's a business, and in the world we live in, business people are not known for their ethics. But at the same time, you would hope that they would take a stand as a community club. But again, I'm not surprised, unfortunately. Football has tended to be terrible with these type of situations.
I mean, I'm really interested to see what comes at the end of all of this. It's definitely one to watch. And I don't understand what they're drinking in that United water that makes all of them act up a bit mad.
They need to sell the club, man. They really need to sell the club, and it's dragging on for too long now, and it's really damaging.
They've decided to hold up on the sale, I think, up until like next season or something, or next year, 2024. Uh-huh. They basically want to see if the club can perform better and they can have a better financial situation to sell.
That's very risky because they might have an even worse financial situation to sell. But okay, thanks. Let's keep gambling. Thanks.
Who is in United's Champions League group?
We have Bayern Munich, we have Copenhagen, and we have Galatasaray.
Ah, that's okay. It's okay.
Yeah, everyone is so spooked about Bayern Munich. We are forgetting the Copenhagen and Galatasaray, which are really 12 easy points if we are on our game.
Galatasaray, they've got stars, yeah, but you know, stars from 2012.
Yeah, I won't be worried about them.
Fair enough. I mean, to end on United, I thought it was very comical on Sunday. The fact that they finished with a backline of like Harry Maguire and Johnny Evans.
That shows you the state of the squad, really, because it's quite laughable. Like, on paper, it must surely sound very, very like ludicrous. Like, these are, I think Evans and Maguire, they were actually backline partners at Leicester like many years ago, no?
Yeah.
You know, yeah. And these are like guys that it seems as if John Evans has even been phased out of Leicester. And he's now playing for United against Arsenal with Maguire. You know, it was always a recipe for disaster. Like even if the opposition's attack are not confident, surely they will gain some confidence when they see that kind of setup in front of them. You know? So, I mean, I feel like I'm actually proud of Manchester United, especially with our performance against Arsenal. I think I was pleasantly surprised. I definitely expected to lose that game, if I'm being honest. Honest, heart of heart, like I expected to lose that game, you know. And the way we played, it looked as if we were going to win the game. And at some point, we're actually winning the game, you know. That offside, I choose not to comment on it because I try to. I mean, I have to believe the technology based on my own line of work, as you
That
know.
was
But I have to
genius
believe.
defending by Gabriel.
Yeah, I was about to say, I was waiting for the opportunity to hail Gabriel. I remember I was watching it and I
Let him
saw.
finish his points, though.
Yes, finish your point, sorry. Then I can talk about Gabriel. I'm very sorry.
Yeah, well, I guess I'm finished anyway. Yeah, it was. I mean, I feel like we somehow got. I mean, at least we deserved the point from that match, and the way we lost the 3 points, in the last 5 minutes, just you know, said everything about the game. It was really a smash and grab in the last few minutes by Arsenal. Otherwise, I don't think Arsenal outplayed or did anything too crazy. It was pretty much an even game, and you know, it could have gone anyway.
See, okay, I disagree in that it was an even game, but I do agree that we got it at the end. I think we played to you guys' weaknesses in that we allowed you to have the ball in defensive areas and in press because we weren't trying to get exposed on the transition, especially since that is something specifically your coach has highlighted is where he wants you guys to be great, the best transition team in football. And also knowing your midfield personnel has issues building up the ball. So again, you guys had a lot of the ball, but you didn't do a lot with it. I think I recently read the stat. You had your second lowest percentage of like possession in the opposition third against us, yes, on Sunday. So
Bro, I don't understand why Wan-Bissaka was playing false nine. Like, I don't understand Ten Hag's tactics at all. At
Exactly. I
all.
also don't. I think the players don't also fully under. Well, no, maybe not the players. I think their fa United fans also don't fully understand it, and it's weird that Ange in Spurs looks more coherent with his Spurs team in less than 6 months than Ten Hag already does. But I need to really hail Gabriel for that thing. Gabriel is insane. But if he did not do that insane move, we're having a very different conversation today.
Yep. It was a very tight game. But definitely fun. Probably if closest to probably the most entertaining game I've been at live personally, just based on that drama at the end and the vibe in the stadium after it was madness.
Also, I can't lie. Ifeato was right when he said that there's no beef in Manchester between Manchester United and Manchester City. Because I was actually thinking about it. It makes me so much happier beating United like that than it would for me to beat Spurs like that. So I did. Like, Arsenal United is the real beef one. Like, even when I.
As a
God bless
Nigerian,
you.
yeah.
God bless you. Ah, say the truth.
No, but that's for us that grew up in Nigeria,
Bro,
especially we
that's
grew up
for
in that.
anybody that grew up around the same time we did, especially that saw them, Henry Vieira,
Bro, we grew up in the Alex
yeah,
Ferguson versus
exactly.
Arsene
We
Wenger
grew up
era.
in the heat of it. So,
That's
and I know like,
what we grew up in.
yeah, so, and I know like during our Emirates time when the Kosovo, there's no money in the bank account, we were looking shaky with it and Ferguson was slapping us up and down. I'm not gonna lie. But when we were on even competing field, it was like, bro, why do you think there are so many London boys that are United fans? Which is mad to me. It's like, no. It's nothing sweeter than beating United like that. Especially off a ref decision they don't agree with. It's inject that. I need that.
Word, 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 word.
I prefer it clean, sure, but okay, double R.
Okay, let's I think that's enough of Arsenal and United for now. Definitely one team on the up and one team with a lot to work on. I also want to say Mason Mount has looked very shaky. Just saying. Let's explore some of the other teams in the Premier League that are doing well in like a quick hits fashion. Tottenham Hotspur, Damola, you mentioned Ange Ball. These guys are balling out.
Yeah,
They're
they
balling
look good.
out and they look good.
I felt like it would take some time for him to adapt, but the fluidity they have in attack especially is something precious to behold. They are conceding chances, but I guess that is a victim of the football they play. But generally speaking, they've looked very, very good. I've been pleasantly surprised by how good they've looked, and I think going into the North London Derby, I'm keeping a closer eye on how they progress. I guess it's interesting because have you guys heard the Ewing theory?
No.
Okay, it's basically after, I think it's Patrick Ewing, they named it after, where if you take out the main star in the team that has been doing the heavy lifting, right, that player leaves the team, or for whatever reason, or let's say the Ewing phenomenon, because I don't know what the theory is. It's a phenomenon where you take out the main star of a team that's generally been doing the heavy lifting and contribution, but after they leave, all of a sudden, the team doesn't go down. In fact, they do.
Everybody else steps up.
Exactly. So in other words, the sum of the parts is always greater than one individual outlier.
Yeah. I mean, except Richarlison. I'm sorry, but I'm putting him on fraud watch. Like, can we just agree that Richarlison is not the guy?
Antonio and Callum Wilson, I love them and their podcast, but they're assholes. And Richarlison is just giving them free content. But I still,
oh, really?
Yeah, they've been on his neck the entire
time. As in Antonio and Callum Wilson, players that are playing in the Premier League right now, they have a podcast.
Yeah, they have a podcast, and Richarlison has unfortunately been on the punching bag of some of their commentaries.
Oh, that's going to fuel him. I mean, it's not going to do anything. We know he's just all hot air.
He said he's not shaking them when they play.
But the whole thing started as a reaction to Richarlison's abysmal performances, right? That's how it started.
Yeah.
They were laughing at him for... Well, did he score one goal or zero goals all season? No,
they said he had taken off his shirt like three different times, but had zero goals and three
I mean, that is banterous, though. Like, why is my man taking off his shirt? You know, having experienced it one or two times in the past, man, I beg.
So that's how it started. Then, obviously, Paqueta is cool with Richarlison from the national team. And apparently, Richarlison did not find it funny. I said he would shake Antonio where next they play.
Even Paqueta, did you see he has his own betting scandal going on at the moment?
Hey, man, look, let's see how
it plays out. It looks like he might be in trouble, bro, because it was like...
Yeah, they were trying to get him.
Crazy percentage of the population where he's from that decided to put both him and I think Rafinha or another Brazil player to both get booked on the same day. And the odds were just a bit insane. But anyway, it looks like Paqueta might be in a little bit of trouble, and that cost him a move to Man City.
Yeah, that's interesting. I do think that something I don't like on the back of Antonio's case, and maybe just recently Paqueta's case, is how much little information the FA brings when it comes to betting charges, where it almost seems like the player and their team have less time to prepare for whatever legal option they're trying to take. Now, this doesn't mean they didn't do what they accused them of doing, but like having clearly underlined charges, everybody deserves their... I think players should have their fair day in court. I don't know about everybody, but I like players to have their fair day.
I mean, definitely. I'm sure they do, though. It's just like how it's reported might differ. Yeah. I hope the legal system is still sensible. But I mean, that leads us on to City. 4 points out of four. They're flying. They're doing this without KDB, without Bernardo Silva, and without Ruben Diaz.
Wait, Bernardo Silva got injured?
Yeah, he didn't play in the last game.
Oh, but I mean, fair. Okay.
They're so annoying.
Can you guys see Julian Alvarez?
Bro, Alvarez. I brought him straight into my FPL, bro. He's a baller.
Alvarez is a very, very good fellow.
If your FPL front two is not Haaland and Alvarez, I don't know what you're doing.
I currently had Haaland, Watkins, and Isak, but I need to switch that up.
So you don't need to give everybody the secrets. If not, you all catch up.
I ain't worried, bro. I'm one step ahead always. There's two unrelated things that I wanted to mention related to Arsenal that I forgot to say. One, I know everybody has been giving Havertz a good time. I've been preaching, give him time, give him time, give him time. I'm officially putting him on fraud watch. Secondly, we should have signed James Maddison. I don't know what we were doing. If this season doesn't work out, I'm forever going to hold Arteta against that. Let's talk about the new look Chelsea.
Chelsea.
Someone said that obviously Chelsea won the transfer window, but yet again they'll lose the battle of results.
Oh my god!
Chelsea are the dodgiest team in the league, man. But I don't.
I know I said this thing at the start of the season when we're doing our predictions that Pochettino is in for a ride with Chelsea, and it's showing. They can't. I think we've seen this with United. We're seeing it with Chelsea. We even saw it towards the latter years of Wenger. There's only so much you can do to outcoach terrible decisions from the admin level, right? Pochettino was talking like he did not know the players that were coming in. He almost seemed surprised. But what was the last guy they signed? Well, he almost seemed surprised by the signing of Cole Palmer. I'm like, bro, when you
sign Cole Palmer for 40 million,
exactly,
I think that's a good sign. You know, I'm sorry to say,
no, it's not the fact that Cole Palmer is not quality. Nobody is denying he's not quality.
It's the manner of the signing.
The manner of the signing, the amount they paid, and the amount of Premier League experience he has. Like, we all know there's British tax, but there's usually British tax on established players in the Premier League, not on players that have barely played 20 games in the Premier League with minimal goal contribution. But Chelsea right now,
they paid more for Cole Palmer than they paid for Raheem Sterling.
That's nasty work. That's very nasty work.
I don't like Chelsea as an establishment. A lot of Chelsea fans have started to say, oh, it feels like Chelsea is the most hated club in the league. I think Chelsea is driving that narrative for themselves with just poor decision-making, spraying money all over the place, fucking up the whole system for everyone
else. Guys, can I ask a question?
Yeah.
Does anybody see any similarities between freaking Harry Kane and Cole Palmer?
What do you mean?
I don't know whether it's just me. It's just so weird, but I just feel like such a... I don't know why I feel so strongly. Like, Cole Palmer gives me, like, young Harry Kane vibes. Like, you know, a young Harry Kane, not much was expected from him. Every now and then, he would, like, you know, he would surprise, you know. But the next game, still don't really expect anything of him, even though you feel him, you know. I feel like Cole Palmer brings, like, a natural seriousness to the game of football that is quite refreshing, because not a lot of modern day footballers have it. He has a very natural hunger to play football, and I think that's what guided his decision to go to Chelsea. Even though I don't know how, you know, I don't know how smart that is, honestly, but I feel like maybe he just got convinced that he would get more of some playing time at Chelsea than at Manchester City, where he has probably grown impatient, you know. But I would just say, watch out for that boy. There's something about that kid, and I think that guy is the striker, and I think we'll find out soon. He has an eye for goal.
I would love it for Cole Palmer and for England, to be honest. I thought Nicholas Jackson has done okay as well. Like, I've watched Chelsea's games because
Nicholas Jackson is
very interested. Yeah,
I believe in Nicholas Jackson.
Yeah, he's a hard worker, but does he have that end product in him? Does he have that
last season touch? He did. At Villarreal,
At Villarreal, he did. And I'll put it this way. It's when I look at, like, young attackers, right? If the only issue is, like, putting the ball in the net, except for some very egregious situations, I'm okay with that. Because I feel like you're putting in the work, you're doing all the outside things, and the inside things, you're arriving in the right position. That tells me it's a matter of time. It's probably something you are working hard on in training. Yeah, young, maybe anxiety for whatever reason in the game, it's not yet click enough. Nicholas Jackson, of the performance I've seen from him, I believe in the lad. I think he'll go far, unfortunately, because I really don't want Chelsea to do well. but he's actually someone...
That's another rivalry that is truly stronger than whatever is going on between you guys at Spurs. Chelsea-Arsenal, come on. That's you know...
Chelsea is also small fry for us these days now. It's not a concern.
Yeah,
easy dub. Yeah, both from anyway.
So Chelsea haven't looked like there's a lot to figure out, right?
I feel like those are the three big, like, you know, after Arsenal, Man United, in the right now, it's actually Arsenal. I say Arsenal after United versus Arsenal. It's United Chelsea for me. That those are the rivalries that we know. Mourinho, freaking Alex Ferguson. That's what we know. And I think it's the same thing for Arsenal. After United or Chelsea, it should be United and Chelsea that are Arsenal's two main rivals. It's a triangle, really. Why are we involving them, Spurs, them, Manchester City? Where did these guys come from?
Geography now. Yeah, local rivals. I know we're Arsenal one. We're Arsenal, the reason I'm bullish about Spurs is that on ground, like for those who I guess grew up in London, grew up supporting Arsenal, whatever, the Spurs beef is very real.
Yeah.
Like we have song, we sing about these
No,
guys every game.
I know the
Every game.
Spurs beef is definitely real. It's just that sometimes I just feel like it's a bit of it's similar to like United versus maybe a bit too far-fetched,
Liverpool.
right? Yeah. United
United
versus
Liverpool.
Leeds. No. I mean it's a squabble that you guys have clearly, I mean, or rather, I feel like you should clearly be over that. Like I feel like it should not be a squabble anymore. It's like bullying if you start raising shoulders and competing with Spurs, because I don't even see Spurs as competition. So why do you, who I see as competition, see Spurs as competition? It's somehow you guys are
You better
focusing on
start
bigger
seeing
fish.
Spurs as competition, brother.
Oh, because they beat us 2-0. Allow
Not
that.
because they beat you, because they beat you 2-0, because they're like several points ahead of you, because they're playing much better than you.
Brother, 4 games in. Early warning, Gragra, please. Let us all calm down.
All right. I mean, conclusion on Chelsea, basically, we don't know what's going on. And I don't understand why in preseason he was using 4-2-3-1, and then he started the season and he changed to 3-5-2-1.
He's not. I don't think Pochettino is taking any risks, and that's the problem. I don't know how you lose 1-0 at home to Nottingham Forest. That's an aberration, really. I don't know how you get away with that. I think he should, I don't know, you should start looking out right away, because you can't invest all of that and not take any risks whatsoever. Why is Enzo Fernandez playing as a 10? Why is he playing behind the striker? How many goals has Enzo Fernandez scored ever in his career, in his season? I don't know what he's doing. I really don't know what the manager is doing. He has so many attacking players on the bench. I don't know why he's not giving Mudryk a chance. He's now getting really, really weird, because I mean, we had so much expectations for that guy, But yeah, Chelsea, I don't know. It's looking like it's going to be another season of havoc for them.
I know it's going to be shaky, but I actually think once Latvia is fit and available, that midfield looks very dynamic very quickly, right?
On
Enzo,
paper, the midfield looks beautiful on
on
paper,
paper,
but man,
yeah.
does Lavia start if he's playing a two-man midfield, though? Does Lavia
He
ever
shouldn't
start?
be playing a two-man midfield. That's the underlying thing I'm trying to say. He should play like a three-man midfield with Latvia, Caicedo,
Lavia.
Lavia, sorry, not Latvia. Appreciate the correction. Lavia, Caicedo, Enzo as the midfields. Jackson as your number nine. Rotates the wingers however you see fit. And then your back four, Thiago Silva is the only person I can confidently say should be there.
Which is so weird because the man is almost 40.
Look, it's, hey man, when you're
Okay, sorry, go on.
No, I was just saying, like, yeah, Chelsea is going to be interesting to watch how they unfold this season.
Yeah, let's move up north then. There was an exciting game 2 weeks ago now, or last weekend, Liverpool versus Newcastle United, both teams that are obviously said to be in the top six, top seven conversation. I mean, Newcastle fucked up, didn't they?
Oh,
One nil up, most of the game with a red card advantage as well, and they still somehow lost to it. Darwin Núñez double. I mean, like, which one of these two teams do you think is going to have the better season going forward?
I think it's Liverpool, in that I'm let's see how Gravenberch plays. I'm not exactly sure if he's,
Fraud.
I don't know if he's a fraud. I'm not gonna say he's a fraud.
Definitely a fraud.
Because I don't know how he plays as a holding six, which is what I think Liverpool really needs right now. But Klopp looks good right now. The games he's played this season, even in difficult situations, he's adapted to it. Although I do blame that win more on a Newcastle head loss from Eddie Howe. But I think Liverpool are looking good. So far, they are doing the right things and picking up points against who they are meant to pick up against. And where they struggled has been clearly obvious, the lack of a DM there. What I'm very curious is what how teams strategize if Klopp decides to continue with McAllister as the player there. It leaves them exposed in other places.
I
But I
would find that a shame, to be honest, just for McAllister.
Yeah, I mean, he know. I don't think he him too. He knows it's not a permanent situation, and So I don't think he'll be like too upset. The issue is will be if that becomes his permanent role for the entire season. I'm curious how he will take it. Somebody I've liked to do, and actually I think Arsenal should have spent their Havertz money on Szoboszlai. He's looked
Huh.
really,
Bowler. Bowler. Yeah, he looks really good.
Yeah. But I don't think I feel like Liverpool's performances have not inspired much confidence, so I'm sorry to say. I mean, they did beat Aston Villa 3-0, which was good. I'll say that was okay. But other than that, I feel like it's a bit like up and down. You attack so well and you defend so badly.
Yep.
Van Dijk has lost. Van Dijk is losing his reps on a weekly basis now. He's just losing his reputation. Liverpool. I mean, I see. I don't see Liverpool doing what people think say they are going to do with Manchester City this season. I see them being found out. I see the Salah rumors taking a toll on Salah and the team, by extension. And I see Liverpool folding very soon, towards the dimensions of Chelsea, actually. But let's see, sure.
I mean, I just believe too much in in their front four. I think I said it in the last episode. They have the best on paper. They have the best attack in the league, period. And on paper, their defense is no slouch either. So I'm just quite bullish that, especially if they're getting results now, I think they can just keep on rolling on. Salah, Diaz, Nunez, that's the front. That's the starting lineup. Don't forget Jota in the background. Don't forget Gakpo. You can even put Szoboszlai in that attacking thing as
You're
well.
right, man. They have a disgusting attack. They have a really gross attack.
Thiago has been injured for a really long time. That bolsters their midfield. They obviously got
Baba, Thiago is
Fernandes
yeah,
and Rafinha.
Thiago flopped. No difference between Thiago and Sancho.
Say, Lizzie. And then on Newcastle, I think they still look very good. It's going to be tough for them, obviously, with their Champions League group of death. But it's going to be a fun season again, I think. I think there's a lot to come from Isak. And I really appreciate Callum Wilson as well. Like both Premier League has never been this strong. It's amazing.
We say that every season. I won't
I
say
know, but that's a good thing.
that. I will
It's
say this
because
though.
it's
I
true.
think not Liverpool, Newcastle's midfield misses Joe Willock a bit. He adds a different dynamism, especially with his box-to-box movement.
Where
And
is he?
he's injured. And there are games where like Tonali is good. Because they've been playing Tonali, Joe Linton, and who's the third person there? And Bruno Guimarães. I do think that in certain games, having Willock instead of Tonali works for them. And in other games, having maybe Willock, Tonali, Bruno works for them. So when he's back, it's very interesting what the dynamics of their midfield becomes, and how Eddie Howe uses it. But being beaten by Liverpool like that, then losing to Brighton and being properly dominated like that is not a good look. The man has work to do ahead of what's going to be a busy season. He's in the group of death, right, in the Champions League, because
Yeah,
he
they
has
have Milan,
PSG,
PSG,
and
and
that is such a sick group, man.
or
That is such
Dortmund
a sick
rather.
group. Yeah, and Dortmund, that's going to
Yeah,
be a mad
it's
one.
fun. Every single game is entertainment.
Anybody can beat anybody at any time.
Yep, my running theory is that Newcastle are going to top that group.
Same. I think so too. I think so too.
Easily. Let's see
Yeah.
now.
To be honest,
The
I saw one guy say he's going to put a fiver on Newcastle bet, topping that group. And I can't even lie, even if you have $5 or £5 or 500 naira to put on that, I don't think that's a terrible bet.
Yes, worth it. Lock
Nice. I
it
said $5 or £5 or 50,000
in.
naira.
Yeah, we can't laugh at our current center. It's not even funny. I mean, you did segue me into the last Premier League team we'll talk about before we do some very quick hits from across Europe. Brighton. Brighton have 10 points. They've only like dropped two of their first four games and they're beating everyone.
No, they're
And
9 points difference. They lost to West Ham.
yeah, sorry. 9 points. Even West Ham have, anyway, no, it's not about West Ham. I think that they're average regardless. But yeah, like, how good is Mitoma? That's my real question, because obviously De Zerbi is getting so many praises right now. Everybody's saying he's the best, the best, the best. I want to hold off on all my De Zerbi praise. Does he deserve it? We'll find out. But like, guys, how good is Mitoma really? And what did you think of the Ansu Fati signing?
I think Mitoma is he's a genius footballer. He's a beautiful footballer. He's the kind of footballer that every manager will want in his team. He's a hard worker. He's extremely talented, makes proper decisions in the final third. He knows when to release the ball. He knows when to shoot. I think he's I think he was linked with Manchester City, right? Pep wanted some of that.
Yeah, they got
So
Jeremy
yeah.
Doku instead.
Instead, yeah, that guy. I mean, I don't know. I wasn't too impressed with his first appearance, sure. But yeah, Mitoma. Back to Mitoma. Mitoma is a really, really good footballer. He's having a wonderful impact at Brighton. But I don't think it's all down to Mitoma. I actually think De Zerbi deserves a lot of praise. You know, it's actually about the team. No individual can, you know, outperform the team. You know, sometimes individuals work exceptionally well in a particular type of setup, you know. But with Brighton's case, I think De Zerbi has proven that I don't think his style of play relies on one particular player, and anybody can be dropped out, and you know, the collective will still perform to the standards that are expected of them. I like how he's playing, really. You see, the young 18-year-old striker, what's his
Ferguson,
name? Ferguson,
Evan
Evan
Ferguson.
Ferguson. You know, that guy, I mean, he's been fit, right? It's not like he's had any issues, but they've not been starting him, they've been bringing him off the bench, camos here and there, you know, calm down, your time will come kind of management, you know? And they've given him, I don't know whether, I think that this was his first start or second start this season, you know?
Yeah,
And he
second
scored a
start.
hat trick.
A good hat
He
trick
scored a
as
hat
well.
trick. Yeah, beautiful. Like, the boy is such a natural striker with an eye for goal. You know, and you can see that Brighton are not don't have any intentions of like relying on that as such. You know, because next game, don't be surprised if you see Welbeck starting. Don't be surprised if you see the entire front three changed to a new front three. I mean, you did say they brought in Ansu Fati. That boy is going to play as a point. You know, so it just means that everybody's on their toes. You have to understand what the team wants to do as a collective, and you have to play your part. And I think that, you know, that's a lot of credit to the manager. And I mean, I don't know how they're going to price him away from Brighton, because the way he's doing is like he's going to be at Brighton for a while. He's going to turn Brighton to some sort of fortress. But yeah, money talks, and
Don't forget
yeah. Yeah, he's
to recognize Tony Bloom and the Black Brighton admin hierarchy. I think in football recently we've seen what bad upper management can do, and I want us to also heal the good upper management. Brighton has a system and a process for the players they bring in to go through, right? To ensure they get the game time, they get the exposure, and when they want to leave, they have an opportunity to leave. Brighton isn't trying to hold Mitoma till he retires. Brighton isn't trying to hold H Factor, Lomolomo,
Ferguson.
Ferguson, thank you. Brighton isn't trying to hold Ferguson till he retires, right? These are players that they understand eventually want to go somewhere else as a next stepping stone, and they are not fighting it. And they are giving the coach the tools he needs to get where he wants to go and play a style that fits him. So shout out to Brighton as an institution. If they were a publicly listed stock, I'll be buying shares in them.
What? Well said. Well said. That should conclude our Premier League action for today's episode.
Sorry,
Let's
guys, quick question. How much do you think Brighton will sell Evan Ferguson or Mitoma
100
for?
million. 100 million.
Mitoma,
100,
Mitoma, yeah, Mitoma,
100,
I think.
100.
Mitoma, I think 100. Ferguson 180.
But what?
And
Ferguson is
I was
English.
surprised to hear 100.
The
Like,
Irish.
yeah, they'll give him British tax. They'll say his upside is massive if he's this good at 19.
18.
That
I think he's still
it's
18.
18, sorry. If he's this good at 18, and any team buying him will get the best of him for at least the next 7 years, and he may not even be at his peak by then. Basically, if I'm Brighton's guy, I'm marketing him as the next Benzema, in the sense that a guy that has been so good for so long that even his quote unquote down seasons can have 20 goals in them.
Yeah, I think that boy, with the way things are going, that boy is not going in for anything less than 150, 180, 200 million if they mistakenly leave him at Brighton for 1 or 2 more years. 200 million at the very least.
I'm not even gonna lie though, I will be very, very sad if Spurs get to go.
Spurs
United.
cannot spend 200 million on anybody, bro.
Well, let's see, sure. Let's
Okay.
see what Daniel may give us.
Speaking of Spurs, let's start with Bundesliga. Harry Kane and Bayern Munich are firing. He looks like he's settling in just fine.
Okay, now my Hurricane hate can actually reduce since he's no longer playing for my rival team. The guy's a star. He should have left Spurs a very long time ago. He's probably the best number nine in the world right now. And he
Rephrase, probably the second best
is
number
coming
nine in the
out.
world.
So who's the best number nine?
Come on now, don't disrespect Erling.
No, give me Hurricane. Like, don't get me wrong,
No, no,
Hurricane
no, 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 no. You're sick.
is okay. Let me phrase. I know recently there's been a this type of thing where people underestimate the importance of goal scoring, and I am
Oh my
not
God.
doing that.
What is he
Erling
doing?
is the best right now in world football at putting the ball in the pitch, in the net. What I am saying, especially for the type of football I like, right, is that Harry Kane being the second best at putting the ball in the net and all the other things he does from a playmaking build-up standpoint is why I think he's the better number nine.
Yeah.
For me, this is a preference thing, not a, in terms of putting the ball in the net, Erling is the best number nine. But from my personal preference, style of play, I like Harry Kane.
Yeah.
Personally, you'll be chopping more
I think
trophies.
I'll honestly take Harry Kane for one season now. I'd rather take Harry Kane for one season than Erling Haaland for one, just like this season, for example. But obviously, once you start factoring in the next few years, then it's a no-brainer, Erling Haaland all the way.
Sorry, guys, just for the record, I don't stand with the rest of these podcasters on their claims there. Have you guys noticed Bayer Leverkusen? They're also
Yeah,
doing really well.
Xabi Alonso. You know how like there are certain players when we watch them play, you're like, this guy's gonna be such a good coach. I'm happy Xabi Alonso is living up to that because Leverkusen looks good. Shout out to Victor Boniface, Nigeria producing all strikers, no midfielders.
No, but he's balling out. And I was reading something the other day. I was listening to something. Apparently, the club that sold Boniface, was this Salzburg or something? One of the coaches was yelling that they don't know what everybody else sees in him, that he's good, but he's not that good, and they're just going to take advantage and sell him. But now he's obviously proven that coach wrong. Baba, keep going. It's lovely to see. I want to see how far they can mount a challenge to Bayern Munich. And funny enough, they're playing each other this weekend. So if anybody's looking for an interesting game to watch,
Well,
that
no, it's not
is
this
a good
weekend.
one.
It's the first game after the international break.
Ah, yeah, sorry. It's international break this weekend. So after that, thanks for that. What else is happening? In Spain, Jude Bellingham is showing what it means to be a 100 million pound player. Wow.
Yeah,
Yeah.
so
Jude, I think all of us had knew Jude was the real deal, but I am shout out to the people around him. You can tell when a player is surrounded by good people and makes the best decision for his career. Because man could have gone to Liverpool and be hustling and be misprofiled to a certain degree and be put under, like, it's not as if he's not under pressure at Madrid, but the type of like English boy kid, inflated ego price they'll be putting on him in if he was in England. Shout out to him. I think he's been so far made the best decisions at each phase he's been in his career, and he's only going to excel even more and more. And
When last did football have like a world-class emerging talent that didn't have like some sort of like controversy, which is like attitude, like personality, mannerisms, just something
Haaland,
personal
no?
about.
Yeah, Haaland.
Why don't you guys like Haaland? There's I'm noticing a beef between
Haaland. No, 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 no. I
Haaland
actually
is
like Haaland. Actually, that's a good answer. Actually, Haaland is actually quite a good answer because we've not found. I've not. I don't think I've particularly identified any toxic trait in Haaland as such.
The
Seems
guy
like
says is that he loves football too much.
yeah, exactly.
perfect media darling. Yeah, Haaland is actually a good answer.
I
But
was gonna say
can anybody
Bukayo.
see? Can anybody see a bit of Mbappe in Jude Bellingham, like a bit of
I'm the one. I'm the king. I'm the star. Give it all to me. I'm the best right now.
Okay.
Everybody feel that.
I see that with a pinch of humility that maybe Mbappe doesn't quite have, because
I feel like it's media portrayal, man. I already saw some reports that like the guys at Dortmund were really like fed up with him. Like they were already like tired of the guy, man. And like him moving to Madrid was like some sort of relief to them, you know. But obviously, maybe he has come to Madrid. Maybe Madrid is the kind of place where those egos, you know, that's the place to have that kind of ego, you know, because every other person has it as well. So I think it just naturalizes there. But Bellingham, shout out to Bellingham. He's having a ridiculously good season. He's had like 5 goals in 4 games or something like that, or 4 goals in 3 games, something ridiculous like that. For a midfielder, man,
I just want to quickly add, Sha, that I understand why everybody yearns the way about Mbappe, but he's him. I agree, the guy has too much noise.
He is him. I feel like the reason I asked that question was I was actually wondering whether it's a necessary ingredient to just transcend the next level.
To be that great, right?
Yes. Because a lot of them seem to have. Cristiano Ronaldo has a bit of it. Messi has a bit of arrogance, a bit of the guy.
That nasty. I think Bellingham has that. I'll use the word nastiness, but his doesn't seem to spill away from the pitch, if that makes sense. On the pitch, he plays with a certain level of like arrogance and confidence in his ability that I think you need to excel at that level. But the key difference I can say is, for whatever reason, his doesn't appear to spill off the pitch. Like this report from Dortmund was the first time I'd ever heard anything in that sort of light about him, which I just think could just generally be frustration from like over the last 2 years, him always being linked with a move away from the club. It's like, even if your teammates love you, the new cycle can get tiring. So that one I sort of get. But yeah, man, I like the lad. I think he is fantastic. And it is very sad to see Gareth Southgate fumble another very great English goal. So that's going to be interesting to see how that one plays out.
Hey, I think that's a good place to call it for today. We'll be back. We'll be back in 2 weeks. We promise.
See, let's not promise. We'll be back.
I'm putting the pressure on.
Guys, talk where that is promising you, really.
You see the people that are dulling you.
We're not dulling you. We're not dulling you.
No. Every 2 weeks, guys, we'll be here. We'll be recording with you, and it'll be consistent. We're going to have a guest on next week. Very much looking forward to it. It's 2 weeks of international break, Sha, so like, we don't talk about. But it should be interesting regardless. Maybe Mo Salah will have gone to Saudi by then. Who knows?
Maybe Pepe will finally be in Turkey.
How can he take that Mo Salah money, though? 200, okay, 150 million, man.
Take that money.
1 year old, man. Like, how long is it going to be at that level for you?
To be honest, if I'm Salah, the way I'm looking at that offer is everything I can achieve in club football, I've achieved it. I might as well go and big bank.
You gonna be the king of Saudi Arabia, man, in a country that freaking worships you. Anyway, whatever.
Yeah, everybody makes their own decision, so I can't. All I'll say is, if anybody is offering me the equivalent of that money for my own profession, let's just say I'll be learning Arabic by now. But
guy, just know that myself personally, I'm working now as I am. I'm going to go and work on a Saudi Arabia project. So, ladies and gentlemen, as Gav McCourty says, love the game, love your neighbor, love yourself.
Bye-bye. Yeah, you.